We're going to have a quiz. It's a hands-up quiz with some multiple choice. Question one. Who was in the second group of visitors to the baby Jesus? If you think it was King Herod, stick up your hand. If you think it was some other king, stick up your hand. And if you think it was the wise men, stick up your hand. We clued up on that. We know it was the wise men. Question two. See how much attention you were paying to what you were singing. Where did they come from? If you think they came from the north, raise your hand. No. East, raise your hand. South, raise your hand. Or west, raise your hand. Everyone's all agreed they did come from the east. The questions get harder now. How many of them were there in that group? If you think there were three, raise your hand. If you think there were two, raise your hand. Four, raise your hand. Or if you think it was unknown, raise your hand. As you will hear Margaret read in a very short time, the Bible doesn't say how many of them there were. Back to easy questions. What gifts did they bring? Shout them out. Gold? Frankincense? Myrrh. Okay, slightly more complicated. What was the gold signifying? Kingship. What was the frankincense signifying?
Priesthood.
And myrrh?
Sorrow.
Sacrificial death of Jesus, which we memorialise at Easter. Now, depending on which church tradition you grew up in, you may know the answer to this question, or you may not. According to tradition, what were the three names? Caspar is one. Melchior. Now, depends how good you are on your origins. Melchior is said to be from which eastern part of the world? They're all looking blankly. Any offers on Caspar? All looking blankly. Melchior is said to have come from Persia, Caspar further eastern India, and Balthazar is said to have been a Babylonian. So, hopefully that's giving you a bit of a flavour of some of the basics of the reading that we're going to hear now for the first part from Margaret.
Listen to the word of God as found in the Gospel of St. Matthew. Jesus was born in the town of Bethlehem in Judea, during the time when Herod was king. Soon afterward, some men who studied the stars came from the east to Jerusalem and asked, "Where is the baby born to be king of the Jews? We saw his star when it came up in the east, and we have come to worship him." When King Herod heard about this, he was very upset, and so was everyone else in Jerusalem. He called together all the chief priests and the teachers of the law and asked them, "Where will the Messiah be born?" "In the town of Bethlehem in Judea," they answered. "For this is what the prophet wrote, 'Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, you are by no means the least of the leading cities of Judah. For from you will come a leader who will guide my people Israel.'" So Herod called the visitors from the east to a secret meeting and found out from them the exact time that the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem with these instructions: "Go and make a careful search for the child, and when you find him, let me know so that I too may go and worship him." Here ends the reading.
Thank you, Margaret. Today we celebrate the Feast of the Epiphany, and it marks formally the end of the Christmas period. Epiphany, it's not a word that we hear often, but it's essentially this: the day on which we celebrate the revelation of the Son of God come to us as a human being in the person of Jesus. In Western Christianity, Epiphany is very often when we recall the visit of the wise men and their gifts of gold, frankincense and myrrh. If you look further afield to Eastern Orthodox Christianity, you will see that they recall the baptism of Jesus at this time. It would be very easy to summarise this sermon and today in six words: star, wise men, Herod, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They close the doors, sing a hymn, and off we go. But at Christmas, when we're surrounded by goodwill and gifts and food, and we think about the comfort of our friends and family, it's not so easy to spend time thinking about the Nativity story and parts of the Nativity story which do not sit easily with us. Mary was a teenage mother. There were questions over the paternity of her child. The supernatural nature of Mary's pregnancy, the virgin birth. The fact that the Holy Family was homeless. Ultimately, Mary gave birth in an animal's stable. The shepherds were terrified when they saw the angel. And as we'll hear more today, the fury of Herod at the thought of a rival king and his subsequent slaughter of the innocent children, and Mary and Joseph fleeing in terror for their very lives as refugees into Egypt. With the Christmas party and the Christmas tree, the food, the friends and all of that, these other things don't really sit well. So who were these wise men? The Bibles in our pews and the translation we've used in church today calls them men who studied the stars. Astrologers, astronomers maybe, combination of both. I'm going to throw a newish translation of the Bible in, and it's called the Orthodox Jewish Bible, and it's a translation made by Messianic Jews. That is, Jews who believe that Jesus is the Messiah. The word that they use is a Hebrew word, chachamim, which means the wisest of the wise scholars, whose knowledge and learning is held in the highest esteem. In Jewish tradition, someone who was considered to be a chacham, or a wise man, even had precedence over a king. If we think about our modern society in the past 100 years or so, we'd probably be thinking of the likes of Albert Einstein or Professor Stephen Hawking, that kind of wiseness. So in other words, these wise men knew what they were talking about when they came to see Herod. And that was probably one reason why he got so very upset. Now, in our experience of nativity plays, and many of us may have played the role of various characters when we were at primary school, we know that King Herod is the baddie. But let's expand on how bad he really was. Herod, also known as Herod the Great, wasn't a Jew, believe it or not. He was actually from Idumea, south of Judea. And the reign over his so-called kingdom was brought about at the same time as the Roman conquest of Judea in the year 37 before the Common Era. Secular historians at the time describe Herod as someone who was never secure. He had a secret police force of sorts, and many of the people close to him he had killed. He had a wife killed. He killed his own mother, brothers, and several of his sons. And he was a harsh king who imposed very heavy taxes on his people, albeit he did use most of the money for the rebuilding of the temple. But biblical prophecy is the central point in our first reading. The chief priests confirmed to Herod that the Hebrew prophet Micah saw Bethlehem as the place of the Messiah's birth. But here's something that our Messianic Jewish brethren have found that perhaps our normal Christian commentators haven't found. They point to an additional prophecy in the fourth book of the Bible, Numbers, spoken by Balaam. And if you've read Numbers, he was the one who had the talking donkey. And the prophecy says this: I look into the future and I see the nation of Israel. A king like a bright star will arise in that nation, and like a comet he will come from Israel. Now the wise men, being very wise, when they left Herod, were probably of the opinion that Herod was not to be trusted. Herod was consumed with jealous, irrational fear. Margaret's now going to bring us the next section from Scripture.
The reading from St. Matthew continues. And so they left, and on their way they saw the same star they had seen in the east. When they saw it, how happy they were. What joy was theirs. It went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. They went into the house, and when they saw the child with his mother Mary, they knelt down and worshipped him. They brought out their gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and presented them to him. Then they returned to their country by another road, since God had warned them in a dream not to go back to Herod. After they had left, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph and said, Herod will be looking for the child in order to kill him, so get up, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt and stay there until I tell you to leave. Joseph got up, took the child and his mother and left during the night for Egypt, where he stayed until Herod died. This was done to make come true what the Lord had said through the prophet, I called my son out of Egypt. Here ends the reading.
Thank you, Margaret. The section that we've just heard from St. Matthew's Gospel is perhaps the one that's most familiar. We've already mentioned in our quiz the significance of the gifts. Gold for a king, frankincense for a priest, and myrrh marking Jesus' sacrificial death. Well, let's spend a few minutes thinking a little bit more about the star. Because of the orbital nature of planets, they go round, and comets, which also tend to go round, astronomers can calculate both forwards and backwards their positions and appearances. And it's amazing that astronomers have discovered two astronomical events which might explain the Star of Bethlehem. When St. Clement of Alexandria did his sums about when Jesus was born, he got them a little wrong. But by our modern calendar, Jesus was born somewhere between 7 and 4 BC. Now in the year 7, something very unusual happened. The two largest planets in our solar system, Jupiter and Saturn, had a conjunction. That means that, viewed from Earth, they will have appeared as a single, brighter light in the sky. And because of the movement of them and of the Earth, this would have occurred 3 times within a couple of months. Now there's another explanation. Astronomers know that there's a comet that would have been visible as well. Comets, if you've ever seen one, are usually visible for several months as they approach the sun and as they move away from the sun. Now it's very interesting that someone over in ancient China, in the Han Dynasty, recorded a comet, and matching up the calendars, it matches exactly with the year 5. In the second year of the Qianping reign period, in the second month, a comet appeared at Qianyu for over 70 days. Secular historians have told us things about Herod. Astronomers can walk back in time because of the orbital nature. And we can see that there was something very real going on there. But the Holy Family's time was overshadowed by King Herod's fear. It affected the homeward route for the wise men, and it triggered the Holy Family to flee in fear of their lives and seek asylum in Egypt. But before we leave Bethlehem, let us pause to reflect on verse 10, which we can so easily have overlooked. When the wise men saw the star, how happy they were. What joy was theirs. In the midst of all the fear and the problems that they were facing, joy was still possible. And now Margaret's going to bring us the third and final section of our reading.
When Herod realised that the visitors from the east had tricked him, he was furious. He gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its neighbourhood who were 2 years old and younger. This was done in accordance with what he had learned from the visitors about the time when the star had appeared. In this way, what the prophet Jeremiah had said came true. A sound is heard in Ramah, the sound of bitter weeping. Rachel is crying for her children. She refuses to be comforted, for they are dead. After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and go back to the land of Israel, because those who tried to kill the child are dead." So Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and went back to Israel. Here ends the reading.
Thank you, Margaret. There's a mix here between a joyous birth and the terrible event that Margaret has just read to us, in which innocent children under 2 years old are slaughtered. We don't know how long the Holy Family stayed in Bethlehem, nor how long after the birth the wise men visited Herod and then come to Bethlehem. But clearly, 2 years had some significance. The gospel is silent on the number of children who were killed. We can only make assumptions. There were fewer people around in the ancient world, and Bethlehem was reckoned to have been about the size of a village. So we're probably talking no more than tens of children. But nevertheless, this barbarous act was no less brutal. God's hand, through Joseph's dream, was at work. And the Holy Family fled as refugees into Egypt. And we're told towards the end of the Gospel reading that only after Herod's death, which secular historians tell us was in the year 4 BC, did the Holy Family return home to Nazareth. If you look at the whole of the Bible, you can see that there's a parallel between the story of Moses in the book of Exodus and today's reading from St. Matthew's Gospel and the Holy Family returning from Egypt. The statue you can see on the screen is actually housed in Berlin, and it is a mother holding her dead child. It symbolises the terrible things that happened in our world during World War II. But the words of the prophet Jeremiah still ring true today, as they did then. A sound is heard in Ramah, the bitter sound of weeping. Rachel is crying for her children. She refuses to be comforted, for they are dead. Ramah is another name for that area of Judea. Who's this Rachel? Well, Rachel was the second and most loved wife of Jacob. And she's said to have been buried near Bethlehem. But her name is the symbol that represents the mothers of the massacre of children. We probably can't imagine what it must have been like for those mothers, those parents and those families into whose life this massacre came and changed them forever. What must they have felt? They had done nothing wrong. Their children had certainly done nothing wrong, yet they were slaughtered by a brutal, paranoid, tyrannical king. History from then to now is full of accounts of the innocent falling victim to political struggles. And you've only got to turn on the news today to see images of innocent children and their lives destroyed in Syria and other places. But what was God playing at? When it seems that he marked those children of Bethlehem for death in a prophecy some 600 years previously made by Jeremiah. Why did God save his own son Jesus, yet bring agony to many, many families? For what seems all for the sake of making a theological point. Whether we like to admit it or not, we all have a sense of injustice within us. And from time to time in all of us, that sense of injustice is brought to the fore. Either through the seemingly explicable happenings of circumstance, or the plain horror of what we could only describe of as evil. Herod's massacre, whether we accept Jeremiah's prophecy or not, was an evil act, born out of paranoia, fear, and malevolence of a man who abused his power as a king. And the similar could be said of evil acts on the receiving end of which we have found ourselves. Many, if not most of us, will have been on the end of homophobic or transgendered hatred. Some of us have been forced out of our families for who we are and whom we love. Some of us have been kicked out of churches, been tried to be healed or even exorcised. Some people have lost their jobs because of their sexual or gender identity. And most of you are sitting here, have had to leave your native countries because you are LGBT. But there are things in our lives which are not born of evil, of malevolence, but they still strike the same level of pain and despair within us. The times when a loved one is struck down with an illness. Why him? Why her? They're such a good and loving person, yet there are so many wicked people out there in good health. Sometimes we face inexplicable loss. A job, a friendship, a relationship, even property. Why did I have to lose out? I am a good person. And then there's the pain of emptiness and despair. For those who strive and yet never seem to find. The couple longing to conceive and have children. Those looking for asylum. Those looking for a relationship. Those looking for work. Why is it that it seems so easy for others, yet impossible for me? Now, the tone of my sermon has changed, and you might not be feeling quite as comfortable as you were at the start during the quiz. But take a step back from the personal and ask wider questions which evoke the same feelings within us. Why is there suffering in the world? Why is there evil in the world? Why doesn't God do something? I wish I could stand here and answer those questions, but I can't. There is mystery. Our God, our Creator, became the created. That is the miracle that happened at Christmas. Our Creator God became human in the baby Jesus. Just like we are angered by injustice, so was Jesus. He spoke out against the hypocritical authorities. He wept bitterly when his friend Lazarus died. And if we read the four Gospels, each of them is filled with stories of how Jesus drew alongside individuals in their place and time of need. I would like to think that as Jesus walked around Judea during his ministry, that at some point he may have gone to Bethlehem, and he would have met the mothers whose children were massacred by Herod. And that by drawing alongside them for a time, maybe that they experienced some comfort. And so in the depth of pain, in the face of fear, either our own pain or others, remember that Jesus understands, because he was one of us. He became human. From the manger at Christmas to the cross at Easter, he is one of us. He is in it with us. Let us reflect on that most profound mystery for a moment. Jesus is in it with us. Jesus is in it with us.